We're going to wait just a minute until the courtroom is all settled down. Next, we have United States versus Smith and DeLancey.
Good morning. May it please the court, Anshu Budrani, Assistant Federal Public Defender for Appellant Richard DeLancey, and I will be discussing the witness unavailability issue. This court should vacate appellant's convictions and remand for a new trial because the government failed to demonstrate that Ms. Vixima was unavailable to testify at trial. Prosecutors in this case began their search for Ms. Vixima in earnest 5 days before trial on April 12th, which was the day of the calendar call. They reached out to her former attorney, Dave Rabin, who was able to then get in contact with Ms. Vixima. He expressed through contacting a family member of hers. And then through a series of communications, he then communicated to the prosecutors in this case that he was able to determine that she was in Delaware, that she was living with her boyfriend, Floristolf Wagens, and he also provided prosecutors with her boyfriend's phone number. He also, in another email to prosecutors, noted that he believed, after speaking with her, that he believed that she would cooperate with the prosecution in their prosecution of this case. And he sent another email indicating that he was willing to help in any way that he could further if the prosecutor so required his assistance. But nothing in this record indicates that the prosecutors followed up in any way on the information that Ms. Vixima's former attorney provided them with as to her whereabouts, nor that they took him up on his offer of further assistance in this case. Instead, prosecutors moved to introduce her video deposition at trial in lieu of providing her live testimony, claiming to the court that she was unavailable, when in fact she was not unavailable to testify. At the time—
How is she gonna be available? They had tried, she's hiding out.
Well,
that's what they're supposed to do.
I think it's sort of a misstatement to note to say that she was hiding out. Her former attorney was very clearly able to reach her, and he then provided prosecutors with enough information by which they probably could have attempted to find her. And in fact, in testimony,
they went to her home, to the home they thought she was at one time. Correct.
So ERO, Enforcement Removal Operations, actually went to her uncle's house, which was the address that they believed her to be at in February. So on February 21st, so she was released on February 6th. The government agent found out on February 7th, and then on February 21st, Enforcement Removal Operations visited the home, questioned whomever was there, and determined that she was not there. But between that time and April 12th, which was 5 days before trial, nothing was done to search for her. But even if you consider the efforts of the government 5 days before trial, in reaching out to her former attorney to get in touch with her, they were provided with enough information in terms of the state that she was in, with whom she was residing, and
they were told she didn't have a telephone, right?
Correct. But
and all they had was the boyfriend. She was in Delaware.
Right.
And this is in Miami, the trial, right?
Yes.
And she doesn't have, it's undisputed she didn't have a phone in this record.
Correct.
And they got the boyfriend's telephone number, right? And I thought the agent called the boyfriend, but it was an inability to leave a voicemail message, and so he sent a text message saying, please contact me.
Correct.
And nobody contacted him.
That is correct, per the record. But what the agent also said in his testimony when asked if he would have been able to run this man's information through whatever databases the government had, he responded, I guess I could have done that, but I didn't, in part because we had her video deposition already.
What do we do with the fact that the government also sent a subpoena to the Rabin, the lawyer, and the lawyer said he would send it on to the boyfriend, because nobody's got her cell phone, so you agree everybody's got to communicate with her through the boyfriend.
Right.
Is that right? So the government does two things. One, they send a subpoena, to the attorney, because that's the only way to do, and the attorney says, I've sent it on to the boyfriend to give it to her, right?
Correct.
Okay, did Rabin ever say the subpoena didn't get delivered or follow up and say the boyfriend wouldn't give it to her or anything like that?
He did not. He indicated that he had forwarded the subpoena to her boyfriend. But the service...
Who was supposed to be with her in Delaware and was the contact point.
Correct.
Okay.
But it's the government's burden to ensure that a subpoena is properly served. And so Mr. Rabin ended up giving the government enough information at least to run through a database to try and figure out a physical address for Ms. Vixima in Delaware through which they would have been able to potentially serve the subpoena directly on her. And I think that effort would be more in line with what the Confrontation Clause requires in terms of determining whether a witness is truly unavailable to testify at trial.
What is the significance, if any, of the agent's statement that he guessed he could have done other things, but he didn't do them because he knew that her testimony had been preserved?
I believe that just demonstrates a misunderstanding of what the law requires the government to do in order to uphold its burden under the Confrontation Clause. The right to confront a witness, as you all know, is one of the most important rights for a defendant in a criminal trial. And while procedures exist to preserve a witness's testimony in case it may become necessary to use that testimony if the witness is unavailable, the government's number one requirement is to attempt to attain that material witness's live testimony at trial, regardless of whether they have a video recorded deposition of that testimony. The analysis really should go forward assuming that that video deposition doesn't even exist, and then the court should ask itself, did the government do enough to obtain her presence at trial in order to testify before a jury and a judge? And so the agent in this case said, you know, I chose not to do this because I had her testimony no less than three times in this case, and there were multiple things that he could have done. They, you know, unlike a lot of the case law that the government cited to in their briefs, you know, this was a witness that was within the United States and subject to the subpoena power of this country, and they had enough snippets of information to run it in order to obtain her live presence at trial. And I see that my time is slowly running out, but not yet done. And so, you know, our contention is that with the information they had as soon as February 21st, if not earlier, the trial date was set February 12th. The prosecutors in the case who were trying this case knew as early as February 21st that this witness had not been deported and was still present in the United States. There was a number of steps that the government could have taken that they chose not to take.
If she came back here, she would have been deported, though. If she came back to Miami.
If she
there was a deportation order, right?
There was.
She had tried to get a visa three times, couldn't get it.
Correct.
So she came without a visa, and there was a deportation order in effect, right?
Right.
And she was mistakenly released from custody before she was deported.
Correct.
And where was she in custody then?
Well, she was under the material witness warrant. She was being held at the Federal Detention Center here in Miami,
right,
while deposed.
So she would have been available because she was right here, but ICE released her or somebody released her.
Right. There was a misunderstanding, it seems like, from the record between ICE and enforcement removal and the agent on this case. But
there was a deportation order in Miami outstanding.
Right. But to your point, whether or not she would have actually been at trial is irrelevant to this analysis.
I think I agree with you that they had the deposition. They still got to make an effort, no matter if they have the deposition or they don't have the deposition.
Correct.
So the question in the case is, did they do enough to make a good faith effort to obtain the witness?
Right. And it's our contention that they did
not. But I just think whether this effort, whether any more was realistic, when you've got somebody who's clearly mistakenly released, has no incentive to come back here, doesn't have a phone, you know, all these factors. It's
right.
Whether in that situation, how much more they have to do
well
than what they did.
And I think the record clearly demonstrates through the testimony of the agent and the email exchange between the government and her former attorney that there was a number of things that they could have done that the agent himself was questioned about, that he very cavalierly said, well, I didn't think I needed to do that because we had the video deposition of her testimony. And so regardless of whether she would have come here willingly or she had been deported, those are all questions that we will never know the answer to because her presence was...
Does the record tell us if they know where they are in Delaware other than they're just in Delaware?
No. So they know that she's in Delaware, they know her boyfriend's name, and they know his phone number.
Okay. And that's all they know. And do we know from the cell number that they are able to call the boyfriend in, what the area code of that cell number is?
Yes. So they have his phone number, and they also know that her former...
What is the area code on that cell number?
I don't know it off the top of my head.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's a Delaware local number.
Right. That's right.
But her attorney was clearly able to talk to someone and also leave a message for someone. And not only that, he indicated that he had been able to get in touch with a family member of hers. And so the other issue is, you know, had the government started this search a little earlier or reached out to this attorney a little earlier, there were a number of options available to them in order to secure her presence.
I have one other question related to what you've been talking about. Did any of the agents or anyone in the government ever express that it didn't do more because it believed that she wasn't going to return because she had no incentive to return because she was going to be deported?
Well, I believe that at the motion hearing on this in the trial court, one of the arguments the government made was that she didn't want to be found. And so that was part of the reason why they argued.
I guess my question is, though, did any of the people who, was there any testimony that the reason that there were no further measures undertaken, that they thought that she wasn't going to return regardless because she had no incentive because she knew if she returned she would be deported?
I don't believe so.
Can we consider that?
I don't believe so. It's not in the record. That would be an inference, perhaps, that you would draw from testimony, but there's no record evidence as to that. The record evidence that we do have from the questioning of the agent is more in the line of what he chose not to do in reliance of the deposition that they already had in their possession.
Thank you.
See that my time is run. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning, my name is Albert Levin. I represent Renato Smith, who's the appellant, and I also represented Mr. Smith at the trial level. With regard to that last issue, I would just point out that the government realized that this witness had been released from FDC on or about February the 21st and did nothing to find her until April 5th. Her uncle lived in Broward County right up the road.
I thought they went to the uncle's residence.
They did. They went to the uncle's residence.
And the uncle let them search the house, and she wasn't there.
Yes. Judge Hall, my point being that they could have probably done a little bit, a bit of a follow-up after that search, perhaps have met with the uncle between February 21st and April 5th again. I don't want to take too much of my time on that issue. I've adopted the brief of co-appellant and also her argument. I'm here primarily to discuss the issue raised in our brief with regard to the prosecutor's closing argument in rebuttal, where after I had closed and indicated that the boat that was located in this case was found between Key Largo and Bimini. My client, when he was arrested, told the agents that they had been adrift for 6 days and they had ended up there, that they were actually going from Freeport to Bimini. The prosecutor, in his rebuttal closing argument, stated, quote, "So ladies and gentlemen, to go down south away from where you're last caught, it's not accident or mistake. You're trying to get in undetected." And he was responding to a comment I had made in my closing argument with regard to the shortest distance between two points being a straight line. And I objected to that comment because there was nothing in the record as to where Mr. Smith, and this came in the form of a 404B, where the judgment of his previous conviction for the same offense was introduced, indicating that he had pled guilty in the West Palm Beach Division of the Southern District of Florida. It made no reference as to the fact or the matter regarding where he was, quote unquote, caught with regard to this issue. So there was nothing in the record evidence to show that he, in the previous conviction, had been caught in West Palm Beach.
Where was he caught?
He was caught in Manalapan, which is in Palm Beach County. It's a small town just to the south of Palm Beach. But there was nothing in the record to discuss that he was, in fact, caught in Manalapan. All that the jury had to rely on was the fact that he was convicted in the West Palm Beach division of the Southern District of Florida.
Would it have been helpful to your argument about routes if the jury had known he had been caught in Palm Beach County?
No, it would not have been helpful to my argument.
It doesn't really matter.
Right? Well, it does matter, Your Honor, because the rebuttal argument was that the reason he didn't go directly from Freeport to Palm Beach County was because that was where he had been caught previously. So he wanted to avoid going the same route because he had been caught in that area before. So he went further south, which is ultimately where the boat ended up. The Coast Guard officers testified that there were a variety of factors that could have let them end up in that area, meaning the currents. There were a number of competing ocean currents that would cause them to be in that area as opposed to him trying to avoid detection by taking...
My point, though, is if you think having been caught in Palm Beach County is an important fact and would have helped you, that it was misleading for the jury to think he might have been caught in West Palm Beach, you're telling me it wouldn't have helped them to know he had been caught in Palm Beach County.
From my position, I didn't want the jury to know that he'd been caught in Palm Beach County.
So,
okay, and there was nothing in the record here other than this conviction to show that he was convicted in a court in Palm Beach County, which doesn't necessarily mean that the offense occurred in Palm Beach County. There are plenty of cases that are indicted in Fort Lauderdale that get assigned to judges in West Palm Beach. There are cases that get indicted in Miami, that occurred in Miami, that get indicted in West Palm Beach. So for that matter, the fact that he was convicted in the West Palm Beach court didn't necessarily mean that he had previously been caught in Palm Beach before, as the prosecutor erroneously misled the jury by arguing, in rebuttal argument, I might add, where I did not have an opportunity to counter that argument. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Hirsch on behalf of the United States. Seated with me at counsel table is Kurt Lunkenheimer, who was one of the trial AUSAs in this matter. As to the first issue, the United States made a good faith effort to locate a witness who was brought to this country expressly for the purpose of being a witness in this case. This witness was found on a boat offshore. And the only reason she came to the United States was to be a witness in this case. She had no prior history or prior address in the United States. The government filed a material witness complaint, and she was taken to FDC, where she was deposed. And at her deposition were the defense attorneys and the defendants. After her deposition, she was...
Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry to interrupt, but do you want to address whether this would have been harmless error? Like, just assume for purposes of our discussion that there was a problem, that the government didn't do everything it reasonably could have done. Do you want to address the...
I will, although I don't want to concede the first prong, but
I understand.
Believe that... in this case, it was definitely harmless error, given both the strength of the government's case as well as the fact that there were two witnesses who were deposed and that their testimony was very similar. So unlike the situation in a case like Tirado, where the deposition was key evidence and the only evidence of something, here there was... all the circumstances surrounding the boat on which these migrants were found, the testimony of various officers about the location of the boat and how the story that they were headed towards Bimini didn't make any sense because the drift would have been northward and not southward, so that they were definitely too far south for their story to make sense. The presence of all these migrants, they were all Haitian migrants who had an extra set of clothes and no identification. which one of the officers testified was somewhat typical of these situations. The other deposition that was admitted into evidence, where the testimony was that they were headed to the United States. And so given all the circumstances of the evidence.
Well, the other deposition, it wasn't quite as clear. Wouldn't you agree that they were headed to the United States?
I would say that the witness was led to say some things that he made somewhat conflicting statements on cross, that he didn't know exactly where they were headed. He wasn't driving, but his testimony was that his parents had, or his father wanted him to come to the United States, and that's why he was on the boat to come to the United States. So was Ms. Vixima a clearer, better witness? I would say yes, she was, but that this witness was also gave the same testimony about the fact that they got on this boat at night and that they were heading to the U.S. for a better life. And given all the other evidence, I do believe it's harmless error. But I don't want to concede the first point, because I think under the circumstances of what happened here, and with somebody who was in the country subject to deportation with no prior address.
But here's my problem with that. You know, if Agent Nowicki had said, you know what, I stopped looking for her because she had no incentive to show up. She knew she would be deported if she came back here, and she, you know, there was no way she was going to show up. It would have been futile. We did what we did. But he didn't say that. He said, I just didn't do anything further because we had the depo testimony. And that to me is a problem. And let me tell you why, so you can address it. I mean, you could always say that in any case where you have a material witness and you take the depo beforehand, but that's not the test. So I'm concerned that if we send a message that it's okay, you know, that even though you know you could have reasonably done more and you don't do anything more, that's okay, I think that's a problem. Do you want to address that?
Well, he also testified, and this is at page 73 of his testimony, we didn't want her to be at liberty. We were trying to find her, but being unable to locate her, we had no choice but to rely on the deposition. So I think, and
well,
he also...
But he does say, I mean, does he not say three different times, you know, we had the deposition, so we didn't worry about it? And does he not also say, I could have gone out myself, but I gave it to ERO to handle. I could have done it myself. I didn't do it. I didn't, you know.
As to the ERO, I think that EROs had the detainer on her, and ERO was supposed to detain and deport her, and that was their role. His role was the case agent.
And that's my point, right? Why didn't he do something as the case agent? I mean, I understand he thought that ERO was independently going to try to find her, but ERO had a different purpose. And, you know, when we're talking about the Sixth Amendment right to confrontation, that's really not something ERO is going to be concerned about, but it is something the government has to be concerned about.
Correct. And I do think Ohio versus Robert, they talk about the efforts made by the prosecution versus the government as a whole. So I would agree with you. But the case agent on the 7th called the marshals to find out where she was. And once he found out that she had been released before everybody thought she would be released, because I think they thought they had 48 hours minus the weekend, which is in the CFR regulation, he immediately contacted the uncle, gave the uncle his phone number so the uncle could reach out and contact him. He immediately gave the information to ERO, and then they followed up. They went out to the house. ERO went into the house and found and were told that she wasn't living there. So this, the agent knew that he had followed up with what he could do, because the uncle was the only contact that the agent knew that she had in the United States. It wasn't until soon before trial when the boyfriend's information was provided by defense counsel.
When was defense counsel appointed? Wasn't it before? Like, wasn't it at her initial appearance? And wasn't he present for her deposition?
It was for her deposition,
which all occurred well before.
In February.
Right.
January.
So why is it then that he had nothing else he could have done? Clearly the AUSA on the case was able to do something. He could have contacted the AUSA if he didn't have, that probably would have been the way to do it. Contact the AUSA, say, look, she's in the wind. Can you contact defense counsel and see if we can find her? But that didn't happen. 2 months went by, and it wasn't until 5 days before the trial.
It is in the record that the agent let the AUSA know on February 21st that ERO had been unable to locate her at the uncle's house. And so then efforts were made prior to trial to contact her.
Right, but what happened between February 7th and 5 days before trial?
February 21st, the agent said that he contacted ERO again to have them go out to the uncle's house again, but that they refused to go.
It seems like at that point the agent had pretty much decided, I'm not going to worry about this.
That he was trying to do what he could, but that prior to trial he didn't have the means to detain her
Says, right? He doesn't say any of that. I think this would be a different record if he said, I wanted to go out and get her. We did not have the manpower. I couldn't receive authorization from my agency because I was assigned to these other cases. We don't have any of that here. That's the problem. All we have is him saying, I called ERO, they said they couldn't do it. I probably could have done something, but I didn't worry about it because I knew we had the deposition transcript. That to me seems like it might be a problem.
The district court that heard the testimony didn't feel that he felt that way, but that he'd done what he could.
But he said he didn't.
He said that there were, when he was asked if he could have done this or that, he was kind of like, well.
My question is, what did he do? Delaware's not a big state, but it's big enough. Is he supposed to drive up there and neighborhoods in Delaware? What would you do?
And I do think the record shows she did not want to be found. The boyfriend's telephone number, which was provided, had no voicemail. Text messages, the agent called it twice, text messages, and there were no responses. So I think the record suggests that she did not want to be found, and Agent Nowicki did say that she was subject to deportation if found. So I think
Looking at the agent's testimony at the hearing, he said, they asked the agent, is she facing deportation if she's found by any law enforcement officer? He says, yes, she is. And that's in addition to her bench warrant, and that's correct.
Yes.
Okay. And did he then say, "So I stopped looking because of that"?
I don't have his testimony.
No, he doesn't say that right there at that point in time. But he's aware that if she comes back, she's going to be deported.
Correct. And I think the district court felt that way. And felt that
the voicemail hadn't been set up on the phone, so he texted him. It seems like it comes down to you got a lawyer representing her, right? And so you try to go through the lawyer. She's got no address and no phone. So I guess the question is it a good faith effort when they find the lawyer, they send the subpoena to the lawyer, the lawyer says, yeah, I can communicate with her, through the boyfriend, and they do communicate. The lawyer says, yes, I sent the subpoena to the boyfriend. He's in contact with her. And is that a good faith enough? That's really the question. Is that enough to show good faith attempt to locate this witness under the facts and circumstances here? Would be your best case for that?
I think Ohio versus Roberts, where the Supreme Court looked at where the government tried to go to the person's last known address and contacted the closest family member, and the court found that that was a good faith effort. The court also stated something to the effect that might there be other things that could be done, yes, but that wasn't the test for whether a good faith effort had been made. In this case, very unusual circumstances to have this witness.
I agree that the test isn't whether other things could have been done. The test is whether reasonably other things could have been done. Would you agree that that's what the test is?
I good faith and reasonable under the circumstances.
I agree.
And the agent had a witness who had no known ties to the U.S. other than the uncle before they found out about the boyfriend in supposedly in Delaware.
I mean,
it was all vague information.
If we look at, you know, the case law from other circuits, for example, and obviously that's not binding or anything, but I think it gives us some insight into what is meant by what is expected to be done. The case law from other circuits talks about when the effort is made, you know, just a few days before, even though you know the witness is in the wind 2 or 3 months before, that's a problem. I mean, that's what the case law says, and that's really what happened here. I don't know if you want to speak to that.
Except that I think you're speaking about Tirado, and I think that it's different in that there had been efforts made to contact the uncle who was in the Southern District, and that ERO had gone out to the house and not found that she was there. So I think that differentiates that from here, and that, you know, we have this illegal alien who's going to be deported if she's found.
Well, except that, again, no one from the prosecution does that. I mean, that's the deportation people doing that, and they're out there for a whole different reason.
And this agent could not arrest this woman. She was not subject to arrest or by the agent. So it was limited as to what he could do.
Just practically, I mean, I don't even know how he's going to find her. We don't know where she is to this day, I assume.
No, we don't.
But he would, and maybe defense counsel can answer this, because she's saying there are things he should have done. I'd like to know what they were. But he happens on her, and then I guess armed with a detainer, he could then take her into custody. He'd have to get a warrant.
Well, the detainer gives the is for ERO.
Yeah. Happened unto her. What would
right.
He,
could he ever well, that's I.
Wouldn't he just call, you know, ERO and have them come out and get her?
She'd run.
Yeah. He couldn't.
He's a federal agent. He has no authority to detain her.
Well, he's a criminal agent, and she had not done nothing criminally.
But if there's a detainer, that means that there's probable cause that she's here in violation of the law. Why? I mean, it seems like, you know, we frequently have cases where people are arrested on detainers by agents.
Well, this agent,
he just couldn't do it in this case.
That he could not. He did not have the authority. That ERO had the detainer on her, and he did not have the authority to do anything else other than to try to get her to appear for trial. And
she gives her deposition. Does she say where she's living at that time?
Well, she was at the Broward Transitional Center.
So she was in jail then. Okay, I see.
Well, jail. She's at the transition center awaiting deportation, which is a little different than jail. When she's at FDC, that's jail. The transition center is not supposed to be quite as jail, but she's not free to leave from there. So that's where she was at FDC at the time of the deposition prior to getting the material.
She was in FDC or she was not in FDC?
She was at FDC. And that prior to that, she was being held at the Broward Transitional Center awaiting deportation. As to the closing comment, I believe that there was evidence in the record that both smugglers didn't always take the most direct route in order to avoid law enforcement detection. And the prior conviction specifically said West Palm Beach on it, and there was no error in that comment. If there's nothing further, I'd ask that you affirm the convictions.
Thank you, counsel.
So what I think differentiates this case from almost all of the case law that was cited to in the briefs is that here we have a witness who is physically present in the United States and subject to all of the investigative tools that the government has at its disposal, not only to obtain unlawful immigrants, but also witnesses who are material to a trial.
You're the agent. What more? Tell me step by step. The agent first got to get on a plane and go to some city in Delaware. He rents a car and drives where? He does what?
Well, so there is testimony in the record, and he was asked about this particular situation, and he noted that there is an HSI office in Delaware to whom he could have reached out for assistance in at least determining...
So what kind of office?
An HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, an office akin to his. You know, he's stationed here. There's an office very similar.
What do they do? They get in the car and they start driving where?
Well, no. So our argument is they have enough strings of information that they could have pulled at to at least try to determine a physical address for this boyfriend of hers. And, yeah, then they could have potentially visited the home. And because the trial date in this case was set so early, it was set in February, the trial subpoena could have been served at any point after that. And additionally, because she was unlawfully present in the United States, that's technically a misdemeanor, which is technically a crime. And so there's many things that, you know, many tools that the government had at its disposal in order to secure her presence and bring her back. They were also aware of who her attorney was at the material witness proceedings in January and chose to only reach out to him in April. And so perhaps if they had brought him into the fold earlier, you know,
never going to voluntarily come forward. That would have been irrational, correct? She would have been deported.
Well, there's actually also no record evidence that she was even aware of the circumstances under which she was released. I mean, suppose when she was being detained.
She's not contacting people. Does it not reasonably suggest she knows it's better for her to be under the radar than above the radar?
Well, I'm sure, you know, it's hard to speculate as to what she was thinking because we have no idea. Her deposition in her mind had been taken, and so I don't know that she believed she needed to reach out to anyone. You know,
she wasn't here legally, didn't she?
Correct. She knew that, but like, I mean.
Let me ask you a question. In the Southern District of Florida, people who are arrested for being here illegally and are detained, do they on occasion receive bonds from immigration that allow them to go outside of the detention center and be on their own on the understanding that they'll show up again for their hearing?
Absolutely.
Does that happen with some frequency down here?
All the time. And, you know, often immigrants are paroled out for a variety of reasons. There's many ways for an immigrant who's here unlawfully or otherwise to be released from custody. I believe the preference is to not hold an unlawful immigrant whose only crime was entering unlawfully in custody for the entire time of their stay here in the United States. And so she could have, she could have believed a number of things. But again, the analysis is not like what she could have done better or what, you know, the defendants could have done better. The burden in this case really does fall on the government. And the same holds true for the harmlessness analysis because this is a constitutional violation, the standard is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And we don't believe that the government has met its burden in this case. Her testimony was key as to the knowledge and intent to enter the United States element. She was steadfast in her testimony about where she was headed. She testified that she paid $3,000 to get to the Bahamas and that her family paid an additional $5,000 to come to the United States. And in their second closing, the government really hit the nail on the head on that point by stressing to the jury who pays $5,000 to go from Freeport to Bimini. Of course she was coming to the United States. And her testimony was the only testimony that hit any part of payment or anything like that. And so it really was the nail in the coffin, if you will, on all of the charges.
You contend her testimony was a key testimony in the whole case.
Correct.
Right. And so help me with this. You've got a lawyer who does represent her. Is that correct? Mr. Rabin did represent her?
It's clear he represented her on the material witness complaint, but it's unclear if he continued to represent her.
But that's what they're trying to get her to appear at trial as a material witness.
Correct.
Okay. So he's certainly acting like he represents her, right?
I think the
well, let's say this from facts. The district court could think he was her lawyer. I think the district court says that.
The district, yes.
Okay. And as I understand the record, he sends a subpoena to the boyfriend. And based on the record, the boyfriend says he can contact her. That's how you have to get to her. And so why is the district court wrong in saying she knew there was a subpoena for her? Okay, and she didn't come. So why don't we take this record? The government was successful in getting the subpoena to her for trial, right?
Per the emails, it would seem so. But
Right. So I'm trying to say, does she have the subpoena or not? Isn't the overwhelming evidence here is that the boyfriend got the subpoena, he acknowledged it, he's communicating with the lawyer saying, she didn't have a phone, you know, get it to me and I'll get it to her. So she's got the subpoena for trial. I'm trying to understand why that's not enough for good faith effort to get her here when they serve her with a subpoena. You can debate whether or not I'm right about whether she was served, and the record shows the government did enough to get a subpoena on her to come to trial.
I would disagree with that because we know
that... Okay, I'll take, for sake of argument, you disagree that the government got a subpoena to her.
To her boyfriend.
Well, but the boyfriend has said, send it to me, and I'll get it to her, okay? So, and y'all are saying if we just go find the boyfriend's address, we can find her. Everybody's acknowledging she doesn't have address. You just said they could have tried to find the boyfriend's address. So assume for sake of my argument, they got a subpoena to her, or at least that's what the record overwhelmingly indicates in the light, okay? Of the evidence. I'll have to look at what the district court found when he ruled on this. But so is serving a subpoena on somebody not good enough?
I don't think in this case, when there was so much other information that the government had in their possession that could have led to proper service of the subpoena on her and a rendition of her from Delaware to South Florida to testify at this trial. Not all witnesses are always willing and desirous.
So the government's to show good faith effort to get the witness here, they've got to do more than serve him with a subpoena.
I believe in this case, given the other information and the other circumstances that were present, yes, what the government did here was insufficient to meet their burden to sidestep the confrontation clause here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. We would ask that you reverse the convictions. Thank you.
And I would add to that that the things that the government could have done and what they reasonably could have done would be to have contacted Mr. Rabin in February when they realized that she'd been let out of custody and not wait until April to contact him. That reasonably could have been done, and I don't think we would have even been approaching this Delaware issue. Her testimony was critical to prove that the intent of my client was to enter the United States. When you bolster or couple that with the closing argument, rebuttal closing argument, which merely was that he had been convicted in West Palm Beach without any type of evidence that talks about the court procedure, the jury was only left to conclude that he was, in fact, convicted in West Palm Beach, but the inference is that it occurred there, not necessarily so by this court's own policies and procedures with regard to the assignment of cases. So the cumulative error is sufficient, in my view, to warrant my client receiving a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.